And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this cloudy Wednesday afternoon, September 17th. Temperatures outside hanging in the upper 60s to lower 70s. And we've got rain moving into the area as we head into later today and especially tonight and the next couple of days. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget's back. How was your mini vacation?
It wasn't really a vacation. No, though. I was speaking yesterday out in Bismarck. It was warm out in Bismarck, and I could see the. First of all, there was some corn that's. If they don't combine it this weekend, I would be stunned. And a lot of beans turning real fast. You could see the sunflowers drying down. So fall is definitely here. And I know you've said we're going to rain, cool down, rain, and then it's going to be back into the 90s next week. Which will
80s.
Okay, 80s.
Yeah.
So it'll be rather interesting to watch the changeover in the crop.
Quickly, and just over the last week.
Well,
really?
Yes. I mean, but I've always said that Labor Day comes and kaboom, we start making a pretty big shift.
So how big of an impact will this rain? This is going to be a widespread rain event across the entire state.
I mean, you talked about it with Sarah yesterday when she sat in for me, and Sarah basically said, look, there are areas of the state that we would happily take this. It'd be nice to take it into the subsoil moisture. We're in a good spot right now for that. And with the warm weather returning, that helps us get back in the field in areas where we're saturated on top. You get to that Candu to Devil's Lake area. Last week, they saw anywhere from 5 to 7 inches of rain. It is hard to run a combine in that, particularly when you've got to put a header on the ground for soybeans or if you're taking off edibles. It's messy. And as we get closer to sugar beets, that'll start beginning of October, you know, 1st of October-ish. We don't like a lot of rainfall then because you got to pull trucks in the field. You got mud on the beets, and mud on the beets going to the pilers create hot spots and rot. Right. And we don't want that.
Okay. Well, like Bridget said, there is rain in the forecast, and we're looking at quite a bit of it, unfortunately, across much of the area. Right now, the rain is down into areas of South Dakota, stretching from about Sisseton up through about Bismarck. A big area of low pressure in South Dakota that's going to be slowly moving northward. And as it does, we'll see our rain chances increase. Starting with today, it looks like a dry day for most of us. But as we head into late this afternoon into the evening hours, we'll start to see rain push in from the south. And that will overtake most of the area tonight. After highs today in the 70s, we'll drop down to 60 tonight. And then a rainy Thursday and Friday. On and off showers, a few embedded thunderstorms with highs in the 60s. And then Saturday, we'll start off with rain, but we should see slow improvement as we head through the afternoon with highs in the upper 60s to near 70. I think we'll see a little more sunshine on Sunday with highs in the low to mid 70s. And then another chance of rain Monday. And then the rest of next week looks dry after Monday with slow warming throughout the week. By the end of next week and into that following weekend, we should have windy conditions and back into the 80s. Now, I don't see a lot of rain after this episode and a little bit Monday. Like I said, most of next week looks dry. We'll start to warm things up. That will help things out. And then we get into a, not a totally dry stretch, but a drier stretch of the LRC cycle.
We watch and we wait, right? This is what Mother Nature is going to give us. It's not like she called and asked for our votes, but it'll be fine. But we just figure it out. You know, you guys talked yesterday about how much snow we had in 2019, and that fall, that was sort of the kickoff to a tough spring to try to get planting done. And we can say that we don't want it, but again, we just have to take whatever we get and manage it.
And I've already had a lot of people reach out, ask what this winter is going to be like. It's just my easy, simple answer. It's a little too early to tell. We're getting indications it's going to be colder than normal. But stormier than normal, that is the big question mark. So, again, we'll have to wait until that new LRC cycle sets up, which is in about 3 weeks.
Well,
we'll start to see that and then see how that unfolds over the from October, early October through mid-November.
Well, if it's going to be wet and rainy, things get messy. And remember, we are coming to you from the new Coral Laundromat Studios. And if you have things that need to be taken care of there, such as the big, bulky comforters, rugs, you know, you think about some of those area rugs in our mud rooms that wind up picking up all the dirt and grime that come in from harvest. You can take those, you can do a self-service or a drop-off at the new Coral Laundromat. It is open, 3620 Veterans Boulevard in Fargo. And believe me, farming is a messy business. things get a lot of dirty. So it's okay to use the laundromat. We, in fact, I recommend it from time to time.
Plus, it saves you work at home.
Yes, it does.
You don't have to worry about it.
It's Wednesday. It is Weather Wednesday Trivia brought on by Darter Plastics. Mm-hmm. Do we have one? Are we doing that now?
No, we can do that now. And Addison, are you ready for the phone? So, again, Weather Trivia. If you know the answer, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000, the first correct answer.
That is the JLA insurance phone line.
It is the JLA insurance phone line. And we'll give you one of our Darter Plastic rain gauges. So, today's trivia question. The hottest temperature recorded on Earth occurred on which continent? The hottest temperature on Earth occurred on which continent? 701-293-9000. Do you think you know it?
Well, of course I want to be snarky and just say something like, you know, Canada. But look at me hold that man.
You did quite well.
Our guest today, one of our guests today, is already in studio with us, Marcia Van Leer with Gowan USA. And Marcia and I just came from lunch, and the entire restaurant now knows that we are nothing but stand-up comedians.
I bet
we were hilarious. And we did not order mimosas. We did this completely sober, and yet we are that funny. So my answer is Canada.
I'm going to say, continent, Australia, right? That's a continent, isn't
yeah,
it?
That's
it
why is. I said yep. Country.
So what continent holds the record for the hottest temperature on Earth? 701-293-9000. You can hear the Google going off. There we go.
I will tell you that it certainly felt like it in McIntosh County in the summer of 1988 in the drought. That felt hot.
Yeah, we're having trouble with the phone system out here. Addison, so you're going to have to get that one.
Sorry. Addison's on the call. Literally, he's taking care of it. So we'll find out if we have a winner. And for those who do win, you are able to stop by our studios and pick up your rain gauge from Darter Plastics. We also ask that when we have rain or even snow events, that you send us your accurate count from the weather rain gauge so that we can share those with the National Weather Service.
And that does help out because we pass that along to the National Weather Service. Addison, you're going to have to pipe that through. I have no control over the phones out here. Our screen is
You could have just stopped line. With, we have no control.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we knew that at the start of the show.
Absolutely.
So we got Mike on line one. Mike, what do you think the correct answer is?
Continent's Africa.
That is not correct. That's what I thought, too. I thought, when I looked this up, I thought for sure that was the answer.
I like Mike's confidence.
Mike, thank you, boy. And he said it with confidence,
Very
too.
Very much, yes.
So, 701-293-9000, hottest temperature on Earth occurred on which continent?
Please remember, if you want to watch the antics behind the scenes, especially as we make these comments, you can reach us not only by listening and answering us on the JLA insurance phone line, but you can follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV.
All right, we have a caller. What's your name and your guess?
My name's Eric, thinking it's probably, you know, Death Valley in North America, isn't it?
Bingo! Yeah, see, I thought it would have been Africa, too, but you are correct. 134 degrees in Furnace Creek Ranch, California, out there in Death Valley.
How hot was it?
134.
How would you know? Who's got a thermometer that goes that high?
All right, I would just like to make the argument. I've spent a summer night at my grandma's house, and because grandma's cheap and doesn't run the AC, I've been in a room hotter than that.
Okay. 134 degrees.
Any summer night in July at my grandma's house is hotter than that.
You're not wrong, man.
Well, you could cook some eggs on the sidewalk there, I bet.
Oh, easily. No doubt about it. Well, hang on. Addison will get your information, and you know where our studios are, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Just swing by and pick up your rain gauge, and congratulations.
Hey, thanks.
All right. So, yeah, Death Valley out in California.
That sounds awful. I'm not vacationing there, nor am I going to Addison's grandma's house. I just decided.
I'm surprised Addison.
My dad's apartment is just as bad.
See, like, no, I think Addison should buy his grandma a new air conditioner if that's the case.
If we were talking about grandma's house, I just want to point out that grandma, when she would fire up that stove, and she had one upstairs and downstairs, and in the spring, you know, when it was just starting to get warm out, you could literally watch the condensation roll down the walls. And we couldn't open the windows because she still had the storm windows on, not the screens. It was, wow.
I grew up in an old farmhouse that had no air conditioning. And let me tell you, during canning season, it sucked.
It's awful.
Oh, it was like, really? Seriously?
Yeah. You got a dirty look for turning on a hairdryer, but your mom's cranking out a pressure canner in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Gas stove. It's like, oh, this is just not awesome. Well, can I go out to the hay mow, please? Can I?
Well, this kind of conversation will continue, sort of. We will be joined this afternoon by Sarah Lovis, who was guest host for me yesterday. Sarah and I and Marsha are part of the Professional Ag Ladies, and we have a list of topics. Some came from listeners. Some are things that we have been incurring in agronomy recently, and we want to talk about those things. We'll give Dean a cowbell again, so when there's something we talk about that he's like, what? He can ring the bell. And again, for those of you who have questions, you can also reach us, the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. And it is more than just Dean and I today. We are joined by the Professional Ag Lady. So you will find our discussion today involving Sarah Lovis with GK Technology, Marsha Van Leer with Gowan USA. Our other regular who would join us for Professional Ag Ladies, Sherry Cook, she's off at work today. She had a meeting out of state she could not skip out on. But part of the project that we've been doing this summer with our Here We Grow field for our 20 acres of hard red spring wheat had sponsors. I shouldn't say part of it. All of it had sponsors. One of those was Red River Retention Authority. And Red River Retention Authority is planning projects all season long. They have a meeting coming up on October 8th. It'll be in Grand Forks. That is open to the public, talking about projects that they have done, what they are considering in the future. There's a whole agenda. If you are curious and would like to attend along with me, you can do that. Again, that's October 8th in Grand Forks. One of our sponsors is also Gowan USA. And Marsha, instead of me talking about Gowan today, how about you talk about Gowan?
Sure.
Okay, you have on my list, you have Domark, Affiance, and Badge SC. So what are the quick points on those three things?
So Domark, Affiance, Domark right now on sugar beets, you know, fields aren't open yet. There's a 14-day pre-harvest if we're still running to Cercospora. So we can still hit Domark, we can still hit Badge. Affiance, we're probably a little bit out of that window, but all three are fungicides. All Domark and Affiance are systemic, and we should be using them on their sugar beets and corn and soybeans and edible beans and, you know, all anything.
Okay. Quick question on Cercospora. We had Don Kinsler in here about 2 weeks ago, and we talked about lilac bushes that are currently dropping their leaves pretty heavily, and it's a pseudo-Cercospora fungus that's doing it. So I'm going to need a little research from you. If I can use Domark, as you said, for Cercospora and sugar beets, could it be labeled on lilacs and other yard ornamentals that I could be spraying it in the spring?
I will find out.
See, that's the correct answer. I don't know, but I'll find out. And that's what I like to hear. All right. Sarah is joining us remotely today. All right, Sarah, quick question for you. And that is, how fast and heavy are MAPs rolling in right now for prescriptions for fall fertilizer? Is there an interest in doing fall fertilizer, or has that slowed down a little bit?
Well, Bridget, that is a great question. And actually, I don't think I've had a lot of call for prescriptions yet. I apologize. I might be losing my voice. Not a lot for prescriptions right now, but lots of maps for making zones. What does that mean? We create zones in a field, meaning that we will figure out how to differentiate areas of the field that act the same or different from one another. And then we will treat each one of those zones as if it's its own field. And we will soil sample each one of those zones separately so that we have that information. And then we can make the fertilizer prescriptions later on. So there's a lot of zone creation going on right now. There's also a lot of surface drainage mapping going on. We make surface drainage maps that look like that explain where the water wants to flow when a droplet falls on the field. And so there's a lot of that going on right now. It's pretty busy. So
rarely are there dull moments in ag.
So Sarah, I have a question. Sarah, I have a question for you. When it comes to zones, ideally, how many zones is like the perfect number for a field?
The perfect number of zones for a field is the one that describes the variability the best. So thereby, it depends. You know how Dean said earlier that he can't exactly forecast the winter weather for this year? Well, I can't exactly tell you what.
Thanks.
I can't exactly tell you the exact number of zones for every single field. Oftentimes, there's a lot of different ways to think about creating zones. The way that I think about it is productivity based. So the areas of the field that would have greater productivity potential and lesser productivity potential. And I try to differentiate those areas out. Usually I start with 5 zones, but can separate them out further. For example, perhaps you have areas of a field that are low producing, but they might be 2 separate areas. Statistically speaking, they've got very similar yields. They're low yields, but they're for different reasons. Maybe one is a low area that is salt and salty and very wet, and maybe the other one is a droughty hilltop, in which case then I can separate those out and create a 6th zone. And I have done these kinds of practices up to like 8 zones in a couple of places where I felt like we really needed that differentiation. Keep in mind, when you get to places like Montana, some of those fields are like 1,200 acres in size.
Yeah.
So a few more zones is okay.
Been there.
No cowbell out of you, Dean?
I was just reaching for it.
Okay. So anything come to mind out of there? That was something that we were talking about.
What was that?
Anything that came to mind out of there that we were talking about with questions? I'm gonna totally want you to jump in whenever.
Not yet. I didn't want to interrupt, so I was gonna let Sarah keep going.
Okay. All right. We have plenty of things to discuss today, and one of them, I don't want to shortchange this, so I really want to bring it up after we go to our news at the bottom of the hour. A listener question, and a question that's been posed to several of us on social media, has been: will artificial intelligence replace agronomists? Okay. And so let me just set this up for us to discuss when we come back. But when you think about your agronomists, these are folks that are on the ground, literally in your fields, that are helping you determine threshold levels for bugs, for disease. They're scouting weeds. They're making your recommendations for fertilizer, seed input, weed control. They're probably giving you advice on your planter and other pieces of equipment in the field. And they really become good business advisors for your farm. Can AI replace that? Well, we'll talk about that when we return and see what the opinions might be.
Could they replace meteorologists too?
Well, there's a lot of discussion, and we're going to have the opinions of the professional ag ladies on this deal when we return. Here is your chance to nominate a first responder who could win a pair of tickets for a meet and greet with Lee Bryce, Shields Arena, September 27th. One lucky responder will be selected. Thank you to Schmidt's Gems of Fargo, your diamond destination. If you want to do that nomination, please do it at WDAYRadioNow.com. The winner will be selected on September 24th. If you want to make sure that that nomination is secure, you can talk to Chris Sherman over at Tech Support Farm to make sure that you aren't being hacked, that your email is in a sortable format. By that, I mean using your farm name, not just an at Gmail, etc. And Chris does an outstanding job of helping you to protect your online business. Okay, the question I posed to the professional ag ladies before we went to our news. So to Sarah and Marsha, do you think that artificial intelligence will replace agronomists? And you both have worked at retail levels. So Marsha, I'm going to ask you if you want to start with that one.
No.
And that's the only answer?
Is that a confident no? Or that,
no, it's a confident no. Okay. No, I mean, computers and AI and technology are awesome tools. They help us with a lot of things, but there's still that personal touch that a person needs. There's stuff that can't be picked up necessarily in photos or satellite imagery that your agronomist, your consultant is going to pick up. Plus also, who's going to be your ear? You know, your consultant, your agronomist, they spend a lot of time holding hands and, you know, walking through the problems. So I would be hard pressed to see that AI is going to completely replace, your agronomist or your consultant, because I still think that you still need that personal touch, and they're going to use tools. I mean, they're going to use AI to help, but no, it's no.
Sarah?
Okay, so I have kind of an interesting response to this, and more of a some things to think about while AI becomes incorporated into agriculture. Right now, we are definitely in a place where AI is just beginning to be incorporated. And honestly, like, we at GK Technology right now are developing a tool with AI to really streamline some of our processes. I'm not going to talk a lot about it yet because it's still in development. I am one of the people that tests it in the background, though, all the time. And it has some really good things to it, but, you know, it hasn't quite completely gotten to the point where we can confidently release it for 100%. And I'm not sure if that's going to be our goal to accomplish 100% of the tasks. If you have a human being that can take a look at it and verify that 95% of the work that came out of that AI tool is good and it sped us up on that 95% of that work, and we still have that last 5% that we're going to have to make sure we've got that human interaction with, I'm still going to call that a W, because from where I sit, I've had it save me quite a bit of time. So it's very interesting from that perspective. But one of the challenges that we always face in agriculture, always and never are dangerous words, I got to be careful with that. But one of the issues that we face in agriculture is that we are dealing with a life science here, a biology, the biology of plants. And there's so many equations out there that software engineers and other engineers, not to pick on you guys, I appreciate all your brain power. I really do. I don't think that way. But sometimes with a life science like biology, those equations don't always add up. There's enzymes. One of my favorite sayings is, and then an enzyme happened. And magically this equation that should never balance does, and this chemical reaction within the plant occurs. So we always need to remember that. And we have things that occur in the field naturally that we don't expect. Remember, computers and AI, they like things to be predictable and able to be very sequential. And that doesn't always happen. And so when that doesn't happen, you still have to have that human interaction. So there's a big, huge, long soapbox. But Bridget's question really was, is AI going to replace an agronomist? Well, it isn't yet today. Will it into the future? I don't know. But there certainly are places where AI can definitely help us be more effective or do our jobs quicker, so we can just get things done faster. I hear the cowbell.
Do you want me to show you how to ring that bell?
There we go. Sure.
I spent all day on the radio yesterday. Not going to offend.
I figured for the fun of it, yeah, I'll ask AI that same question. And what popped up was, AI is highly unlikely to take over agriculture entirely. Instead, AI is transforming the industry by automating repetitive tasks, enhancing productivity, and promoting sustainability, which empowers farmers rather than replacing them. Human judgment and expertise will remain essential for strategic decision making and managing AI assisted operations.
So especially if we think about like food processing, et cetera, that's a great place that AI can step in and help with some of those repetitive tasks. I also think we have to remember that AI can be as simple as what we do with autonomy in our tractors. Precision, whether it's automatic shutoffs on our sprayers using the cameras on the booms, all of that is AI. But I also think two other points we want to make. Ag is very much a belly-to-belly business, meaning we build relationships, we do business deals and handshakes. We still have a lot of aged wisdom that can help us make decisions. And that's my second point. AI doesn't have the wisdom that comes with it. When I have a question from a listener that I'm not sure what the answer is, and I know I can call Marcia or Sherry or Sarah or any of the other plethora of experienced agronomists because they've seen something or they've seen something similar, and we can reason our way through it to finding an answer. I can't necessarily do that with AI. It can only rely on what it currently knows at the moment in time. As humans, we can go back and look for something different, and we can recognize different patterns and signs of it.
Well, and the other thing too is kind of allude to what Sarah said, you know, Mother Nature also changes quickly.
Very.
I mean, we've seen this with weed resistance. We've seen this with disease resistance and management and stuff. I don't know that AI would be able to pick up on that change as quickly as a human at this point.
Right.
Now, that's not to say that those tools, I mean, the tools are there and the tools are great. And that's really what it is.
And that's a great point, if I may. That's a great point, Marcia. You know, the AI tool that we're developing right now, part of my role in testing it is helping it learn, which is weird, right? Because there's this AI thing that's like learning what I do. And that's how it's going to try to do what it's going to do into the future. But every now and again, I'm like, nope, you didn't look at this right. You have to look at it this way. And I have to tell that to the programmer so we can get it to think that way. So it's interesting from that perspective.
Well,
and we've all seen Terminator. Just saying. What's Green Cart guy going to do?
Yeah. What's Green Cart guy going to do? If you watch Terminator, that means the coach is coming to get us faster than we can get it.
It is.
I mean, that's really what we got to think about.
It's on a mission.
Well, Marcia, you've been out in Western North Dakota. We talked about this at lunch. Kosher right now is horrendous.
Water hemp is reaching new areas.
Oh, God,
the
yes.
Devil's Lake area, holy buckets. We've got a buddy out there that's constantly like sending us new pictures of water hemp all over the place out there.
You know, when I first started at NDSU, it was leafy spurge. I thought leafy spurge was like going to take over the world. I didn't know what this stuff was. They were wrong. It's kochia and water hemp.
They are.
I don't care.
They are two weeds that spread viciously. They change rapidly in their biology, so they become incredibly adaptive to our environment and what we are doing, whether it's with cultural practices, chemistry practices, and more. And okay, we've tried to be nice to those weeds. We have tried to find, you know, easier ways around it, whether it's with chemistry control, etc. We can't do it anymore.
No, we can't hit that easy button anymore. And we've been kind of coasting on that for a while. And unfortunately, this year, if your field wasn't a train wreck, your neighbor's probably was.
Oh, my God, yes. And with kochia, okay, we laugh about tumbleweeds, right, and really dry years. That's a kochia plant.
Kochia rust and thistle.
And it can, as it rolls across that field, you can literally see the seed pattern that it leaves behind. So if we aren't taking control of those early on, it's, even if it was your neighbor's problem, now it's yours.
I actually have some pictures of that.
Yep.
I actually have some pictures of kochia tumbling through our yard too, and our dog going absolutely crazy across it. But yeah, it's, you can tell kind of the biology or the history of a weed movement, I guess, just by looking at some of that stuff. It's just crazy.
Okay, hang on. Hang on. Dean's got a listener caller.
Yeah, we got Steve on line one. Steve, welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus. What's going on?
Well, it's 70 degrees in New Jersey.
Thank you.
Colin from New Jersey, what's on your mind, Steve?
What's on my mind? All this talk about AI. I mean, also the fact that having Marcia and Sarah in the same vicinity, this is awesome. I'm a big fan. And, you know, let's talk about AI. Just a really quick question off the top of my head. I admit I'm just doing this kind of blind here. Did you ever think many years ago that we'd be having these kind of conversations, or it's just been now it'd be business as usual?
Oh, that's actually...
You know, we wouldn't have to worry about...
That's a pretty good question, actually. I did not foresee all of this coming 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, we didn't even... I mean, we were still Palm Pilots. No, none of us saw that. I mean, we were still, you know, fence row on... on, you know, corn planting and stuff. It was all done with markers. And you don't, you know, you don't see the equipment having even that. It's the equipment has the technology and stuff. So, yeah, 20, 30 years ago. Oh, God, no.
We actually do at the home office in Halstead, Minnesota, have an iPack that was used to be hooked up to a GPS to go out and mark things with ADMS software. And, you know, I'm calling in today to the radio from the map cave here. So I'm sitting with my three screens so I can do my mapping. I don't get to the field actually that often anymore, which is sad. I never thought in a million years my agriculture career would end me up like behind computers all day long. It's interesting.
So Steve asked an awesome question, and we have one more listener question to build on that. And that, so Steve, you kicked something off here. What breakthrough in ag and agronomy do you think AI could achieve? Whether this is something like a super crop or a major breakthrough, even though we haven't just been able to do it yet and people have been working on it for a long time, do we know what the next major thing might be? Sarah's probably already building it over at GK Technology and we don't even know yet.
You know, it's interesting because I think every generation has their great technology that they can really think about. You know, when the hydrostatic transmission came out, when I think in my lifetime so far, the greatest technologies that agriculture have had an opportunity to glean is GPS and also GMO technology and seeds. I think those are probably the two greatest things. But, you know, it's interesting. I came to that conclusion a few years ago. And I feel like even at that point in time, those things were pretty well integrated into the agricultural system. So it's interesting. Sometimes I don't think we always realize what that next greatest technology is until after it's incorporated and you kind of reflect on how it's changed things. And so, you know, I don't know what that next great thing is, but I do think that AI is definitely part of what's going on. Maybe pesticide use reduction, not from actual reduction in pesticide use, but coming up with ways that we can be more targeted in making sure that we're just hitting the weeds or, you know, those sorts of things.
Okay, what was the question again?
What do you think the next big breakthrough is going to be?
With
using AI? Maybe it solves something.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay, because I was actually going back, you know, I'm sitting there, and when you're talking about GPS, I mean, do you remember the light bars?
Yeah, they were a big deal.
And the when I first started scouting, like, when I was an intern, I had to use this, like, radar type, I don't even remember what it was. It was like a mileage counter thing that I was trying to to map with, and, yeah, that was a little scary. I don't like super crop.
Okay.
I really don't like that word because that tends to, when you get super crops, then we end up with like super problems.
Yes, we do. and every time we have.
So super crop isn't the way I'd go. I would love to see like AI come out with maybe a whole new way to get a mode of action out.
Yes.
We have no new modes of action coming out and, you know, weed resistance and stuff like that. I would love to see AI really work on that.
I think as far as what could AI do for us that's been that technology we've been working on that we haven't quite got there yet. I think we are on the cusp of some of our crops being able to be a little more self-sustaining. And by that, I just had a headline earlier this week about a wheat that can fertilize itself. You know, we know that soybeans can fix their own nitrogen. Most legumes can, but this is a wheat that will take literally its own plant secretions, pull nitrogen from the air and create some of its own fertilizer. Not everything that it would need, but certainly would supplement what's available, and you would not need as much synthetic fertilizer as an additive, particularly if you're in high drought areas and you still want to continue to raise wheat. One of the things we've done across this globe is we've taught each other how to grow wheat, and we can grow it really well. Now, what can we do better with it? You know, wheat is still the number one consumed crop globally. Rice is number two. And I think some of those types of breakthroughs, helping the plants help themselves, will likely be what we're waiting for next.
And AI, when it comes to meteorology, too, it's helped. But there's no way it will replace you know, we can use it as a tool, but it's just another tool in our tool belt to use. But it's not, it can't replace, because there's so many, there's so much human interaction that has to be done to not only interpret the models. Are the models right? We all know they're not. Yeah. I mean, so you need that human interaction to be able to decipher which model is correct, which model isn't. So I think the same kind of thing. It's another tool in our tool belt to use, but it's not going to replace.
You know, we're going to run out of minutes in the show before we get a chance to answer a whole lot more. But thank you to Steve for calling in and asking that. That really kicked off a good question that then was supplemented by what one of our listeners, Justin, wanted to ask as well. And before we get to the end of the hour, I want to make sure to say thank you. Marsha's here in studio with Gowan USA. They are one of our sponsors for our September Suicide Awareness Series. We want to help folks understand what is going on in our farming community right now, whether it's farmers, ranchers, and others in the industry that are really carrying that heavy burden in silence of stress, anxiety, and so much more. And thank you to Prairie St. John, Maple River Grain and Agronomy, again, Gowan USA, and Valley Christian Counseling for being sponsors and helping us emphasize programming specific to Thursdays each month, each week in September, that will focus on resources and help. In fact, that'll be one of the things we do on air tomorrow. We're going to talk about that suicide awareness.
Well, let's get a quick recap of the weather here before we end our day. We've got cloudy skies out there right now. Temperatures in the upper 60s to the low 70s. Taking a look at radar right now, there's some showers just south of the border, stretching from about Sisseton, stretching up towards Ellendale and out towards Bismarck, all of that rotating northward. So areas around Wahpeton, you're going to be seeing a little light sprinkle activity within the next couple of hours, and eventually that's going to be rotating north into the FM area as we head towards sunset. And then a more widespread rain envelops the area as we head into overnight, and especially tomorrow. Tomorrow and Friday, this area of low pressure down to our south is going to slowly rotate north, and we're going to see periods of rain. And some of that could be heavy at times, some widespread inch rainfall totals. Some spots could pick up as much as 2 inches. And we're talking across most of the central eastern part of the state, down into South Dakota and into Lakes Country as well. So this isn't an isolated, this is a widespread event, with the heaviest being just west of the valley, it looks like. Between, let's say, Valley City and Bismarck, some of those areas could pick up easily 2 inches of rain over the next 48 to 60 hours.
Big thank you to the professional egg lady, Sarah. Sherry is here in spirit, as well as Marsha, for being with us today as we talk through AI and agriculture.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.